Hello, everyone, and welcome to a session brought to you by AIRS LA, the Audio Internet Rating Service of Los Angeles. My name is Nancy Porter, and it is my pleasure to share excerpts from the week publication with you. I need to remind you, you're listening to a reporting provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Items read on AIRS LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers, and no unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. I will remind you again that The Week is a magazine which publishes condensed versions of news articles from global sources. We'll start with excerpts from the August 22nd issue, 2025, and their tagline on the cover says, "All you need to know about everything that matters." Okay, let's move to the section called The Briefing. And the headline of this article is "An Insatiable Hunger for Protein. Americans can't get enough of the macronutrient. But how much do we really need? Are we eating more protein?" 61% of Americans said they upped their protein intake last year, according to a study by the food conglomerate Cargill. And they're just getting started. In a year-end survey by Chobani, 85% said they aim to power down more of the micronutrient in 2025. They won't have to look hard to find it. Supermarket shelves are awash in items jacked with protein, long chains of amino acids that play an essential role in repairing cells, building and maintaining muscles, regulating metabolism, and other bodily processes. And it's no longer just protein-loaded bars and powders that are for sale. There are protein-backed frozen waffles, cereals, pastas, snack chips, and even candy, sodas, and bottled water. One can start the day with a bowl of maple almond Wheatings protein cereal, 22 grams of protein per serving, nearly the amount in four eggs, and a cup of Javi protein coffee, 10 grams of protein. Then lunch on Emmy instant chicken ramen, 23 grams, snack on Quest nacho cheese protein chips, 18 grams per bag, and indulge with mint chip ice cream from protein pints, 30 grams per carton. It doesn't matter what it is. People want to put protein in it, said Anthony Flynn, CEO of Ubar, which produces high protein items. Over the past 2 years, it has just been an insane amount of demand. So how big a business is this? The global market for protein supplements, powders, shakes, and bars topped $28 billion last year and is on track to reach some $55 billion by 2032, according to Fortune Business Insights. That does not include high-protein foods and beverages, the number of which quadrupled between 2013 and 2024, according to market research firm Mintel. Last year, 97 new products with protein in the brand name hit the market, says the firm, more than double the number in 2023. Businesses that get a toehold among the protein-craving public report whirlwind growth. "It is surpassing our wildest expectations," said Paul Reese, who in 2023 co-founded Protein Pints, which is on track to rake in more than $20 million this year. So what's driving this demand? Experts trace the roots of the trend to the early 2000s, when the low-carbohydrate, high-protein Atkins diet exploded, gaining an estimated $30 million at its peak, 30 million followers at its peak. That was the breakthrough, said sports nutritionist Liz Applegate. The idea that we could treat obesity with a high-protein diet. Protein gained further luster with the paleo and keto diets, which took hardline stances against many carb-rich foods and encouraged adherents to scarf more meat, nuts, and seeds. More recently, the mania has been fed by a surge in men and women taking up weightlifting and seeking foods that will boost muscle growth, and the rise of an army of social media influencers and podcasters, many linked to Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s Make America Healthy Again movement, claiming that the country has a protein deficiency crisis. Dr. Peter Atta, the popular podcaster and longevity guru, calls federal protein guidelines a joke and says active people should triple them, while TikTok is awash in fitness mavens extolling their 30 grams protein breakfasts and other feats of protein maxing. Another factor is the rise of weight loss drugs like Ozempic. Many users turn to high protein diets to avoid loss of muscle mass. Do we really need all this protein? Most nutritionists say we don't. For healthy adults, federal guidelines recommend eating 0.36 grams per pound body weight a day. So for a 150-pound person, that's about 54 grams, roughly the amount in an 8.5-ounce chicken breast. People eating healthy diets easily achieve that. In fact, most of us eat significantly more. The average U.S. man exceeds the recommendation by about 55%. The average woman by about more than 35%, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. We get tons of it, said University of Minnesota nutritionist Joanne Slavin. It's just not a nutrient of concern. And there's only so much protein our bodies can process. Anything extra gets turned into fat or excreted through urine. There's very little evidence that more is better, said nutritionist Marianne Nestle. That doesn't deter people like Morgan Gates, a 20-year-old sales representative. His day starts with a half dozen eggs. Lunch is a smoothie made with Greek yogurt and protein powder. Dinner is a pound of red meat. Going big on protein, he says, gave me the body I wanted. Well, is too much protein harmful? There's no medical consensus, but some doctors see reason for concern. Excessive protein intake can tax the liver and kidneys and has been linked to cancer, heart disease, and diabetes. Animal-based proteins also tend to be high in saturated fat, which can raise the risk of cardiovascular disease. And nutritionists and personal trainers want their clients to know that processed foods like ice cream, candy, and marshmallow-flavored snack bars don't get any healthier if a pile of protein is added to the recipe. How about a chicken breast, people? Said Constance Contrissi, a personal trainer outside Chicago. How about an egg? Meanwhile, as Americans try to consume ever more protein, they're ignoring the nutrient that is almost certainly lacking in their diets. What is that? Fiber. A 2021 study found that only 7% of Americans get enough of the stuff, which is found in nutrient-dense foods such as beans, nuts, fruits, and whole grains. Fiber lowers cholesterol, promotes gut health, helps regulate blood sugar, and cuts the risk of heart disease and cancer. It would be far better for Americans to obsess over fiber than protein, said Bettina Mittendorfer, a nutritionist at the University of Missouri School of Medicine. But it doesn't play nearly as well on social media. Would you rather have muscle strength and vitality, she said, or prunes and Metamucil? All right. I'm moving on now to the column titled Best Columns in the United States. This short article headline, The Crime of Letting Kids Go Outdoors. It was written by Nicole Gelinas in the New York Times newspaper. American parents no longer have a right to let their children go for a walk, said Nicole Gelinas. Several months ago, Jessica Ivy Jenkins and her husband, Samuel Jenkins, let their 10-year-old and 7-year-old sons go unaccompanied to their local grocery store in Gastonia, North Carolina, provided that the kids remain on the phone with them the entire time. On the way home, the younger boy stepped off a curb and was struck and killed by a car. Gaston County's District Attorney Travis Page had the grief-stricken Jenkins arrested and jailed on involuntary manslaughter charges with a $1.5 million bail. They were released on a suspended prison sentence only when they pleaded guilty to felony child abuse, a criminal record that may prevent them from holding jobs and renting apartments. Page showed more leniency to a father who, in an undated incident, allegedly left his gun unsecured, resulting in another child shooting the man's 10-year-old daughter. Not long ago, kids routinely went outside to play or walk to stores without supervision. But in many communities, parents are being charged with crimes for what used to be normal childhood activity. Is this really the kind of society we want? The next column from the United States is titled Replacing In Vitro Fertilization with False Blame. And this was written by Amanda Marcotte in the publication titled Salon. The bait and switch President Trump pulled on women struggling with infertility was predictable, said Amanda Marcotte, but still outrageous. After vowing during the 2024 campaign to make in vitro fertilization free and creepily calling himself the fertilization president, Trump admitted to reporters recently that he was breaking his promise on free IVF. Some women who voted for Trump on this issue expressed dismay, but the Christian right celebrated. That's because fundamentalist Christians oppose in vitro fertilization about as fiercely as they oppose abortion. They are already offering an alternative called restorative reproductive medicine, a quack program that claims to tackle the root causes of infertility. The right-wing Heritage Foundation, the primary mover of Project 2025, backs restorative reproduction medicine and claims birth control pills cause infertility, calling them a daily medication with no therapeutic purpose. Decades of research has proved this flat out false. Restorative reproductive medicine also blames delayed marriage and premarital sex for infertility. Clearly, the real agenda here is not to help women who want children. It's to scare women out of using contraception or making any other effort to control their reproductive lives. Conservatives believe women should be enslaved to their biology, and with Trump's help, are replacing legitimate medicine with a wall of blaming and shaming. And the last article in this section is titled, Is Vance Undermining Trump? And this was written by William Christoffel in the publication titled The Bulwark. If President Trump's cronies want to purge the administration of disloyal backstabbers, they should turn their gaze to J.D. Vance, said William Kristol. The vice president's curious intrusion into the Epstein scandal would suggest he already seems to be planning for life without Trump. Recently, Vance held a private meeting to discuss how to handle the Epstein mess with Attorney General Pam Bondi, FBI Director Kash Patel, and other high-level officials. Then Vance gave the simmering Epstein issue new oxygen during a Fox Business interview, saying that Americans want answers on what the files contain and speculating on how many Democrats were involved with Epstein, including Bill Clinton. Vance's call for transparency increased curiosity about just what the files show, including about Epstein's close pal, Donald Trump. That directly undermines Trump's determined efforts to keep the files secret and hope the issue just goes away. If one had a suspicious mind, one might think Vance knows what he's doing. Epstein is the one issue that hurts Trump with his base, and a damaged president is less likely to try to stay in office in 2028, which opens the door to the cunning and ambitious J.D. Vance. It's to J.D.? Okay, here's a little tiny box titled Viewpoint. This was written by Bill McKibben in the publication Mother Jones. Right now, the world wants to go solar, but the Trump administration is bucking that trend, pulling out all the stops to destroy renewable power. I mean, what the heck? We're bathed in free energy every daylight hours. Why should the Chinese and the Australians and the Germans get access to the sun while you're denied it? One possibility is that America will simply sit out the global solar boom in the same way Cubans, thanks to endless embargoes, still drive 1970s Chevrolets. Perhaps having self-embargoed from the clean energy future, America will someday be a living museum of coal-fired power plants and basement furnaces. All right, let's move on to the best column section from Europe. All right, the first article is titled Sweden, the box in the prime minister's inner circle. It's embarrassing when anyone surrenders their thinking to AI, said Signe Krantz in the publication Aftonbladet. But it's a potential security risk when the leader of a country does it. Recently, Swedes were appalled to learn that Prime Minister Ulf Kristersson had confessed to consulting ChatGPT and the French virtual assistant Le Chat quite often to get a second opinion about matters of state. Because AI companies collect user data, Kristersson's queries are now forever linked to him on some American server. Who knows what nefarious actors might gain access to this information? In any case, AI is almost never better than reading an article or simply sitting down and thinking. And that's especially true when you've been chosen to run a country. Kristersson has a stable of well-paid advisors. He should not be using an AI bot to formulate policy. As one AI expert put it, we didn't vote for ChatGPT. Kristersson is no fool, said Tobias Wilkstrom in Dagens Industri publication. He surely never entered state secrets into any computer. The truth is, these days, information risks are baked into all aspects of our lives. Christensen's center-right moderate party knows that firsthand. Last month, it had to disable an automated service that sent personal greetings from the prime minister after users hacked it to send cheery messages to the likes of Hitler and Idi Amin. The upside here is that Sweden is not being governed by a person who only sees dangers in AI. Christensen is merely keeping up with the times by taking advantage of a new and already ubiquitous technology. Anyone who Googles a question automatically gets an AI-generated answer at the top of the results. And we all know that we cannot trust the answers bots spit out. They're more useful as brainstorming exercises. In fact, the prime minister's interest in using new technology could benefit Swedes, said Andreas Ekström in Helsingborg Dagblad publication. Our government will have a fair chance of understanding how artificial intelligence works only if its leaders use it. And once they understand it, they can write laws that truly protect the interests of citizens against the larger digital companies. Yet even ChatGPT isn't sure this is a good idea, said Sarah Schwartz-Wyman in the publication titled Expression. When we asked it whether a prime minister should consult it, the answer was, in principle, yes, it may be appropriate in some cases. But when we asked whether a leader should seek its advice on moral issues or anything that might have security implications, it confessed it lacked the ability to understand the full consequences. Our society needs more critical thinkers, not decision makers who rummage for answers in black boxes, said Christopher Alstrom in the publication Dragons Nibiter. Every AI model yet released has proved to be a sycophant and a bootlicker, prone to spreading conspiracy theories. They will even recommend you the proper dosage of ketamine to get you high if they reckon that will please you. The more we use this technology, the more our critical thinking skills will atrophy and the less creative we will be. When those in power start to rely on the tool as if it were a compass rather than a calculator, then we have a problem. The next little article is from Spain. Headline, Laws We Will Never Enforce. This was written by Eric Sierra in the publication titled La Vanguardia. Spanish lawmakers just love telling people what to do, said Eric Sierra. Our local, regional, and national legislators have passed more than 8,000 new laws a year for the past 20 years. But it's Catalonia that leads the way. Authorities there have declared that smoking on Catalan beaches is going to end, while the regional capital, Barcelona, is outlawing pub crawls. The bans on these two harmful activities were born of good intentions. Locals are sick of drunken tourists singing and shouting as they lurch their way to the next bar in the middle of the night. And nobody, local or tourist, wants a whiff of stinky smoke while trying to enjoy a sea breeze. But if you're reading these lines, lying on the sand with a cigarette in your mouth, don't worry. So far, the beach smoking ban is in effect in only 20 of the 76 towns responsible for Catalonia's 174 miles of beaches, and half those towns don't even have their own police forces. How can they patrol the shoreline when they barely have enough personnel to regulate traffic? Meanwhile, there's enough real crime in Barcelona that it's highly unlikely the cops will interfere with some unruly British stag party. Prohibition is the easy way out, but if there's no one to enforce it, authorities just lose all credibility. And the last headline under the best columns of Europe is from Norway. A red carpet for American academics. This was written by Nathan Warren in Dagens Næringsliv publication. The world's most renowned university is no longer welcome in the United States, said Nathan Warren. President Trump is persecuting Harvard, slapping immigration restrictions on researchers and students, slashing funding, and strangling academic freedom. The Harvard Corporation, the nonprofit in charge of the university, needs to get creative to save the treasured institution from Trump's political attacks. This presents a historic opportunity for Scandinavia. Norway's open and globally oriented society is a perfect fit for Harvard. With our $2 million oil fund, we can buy the whole lot. Import the faculty. Oh, I'm sorry, I misread that. It should have been, with our $2 trillion oil fund, we can buy the whole lot, import the faculty, and build a brand new campus. Such a move would improve the lives of all Norwegians by making us a hub of global intellectual discourse, economic growth, and societal development. And Harvard, a champion of everything liberal, from women's empowerment to climate solutions, aligns perfectly with the oil fund's goal of investing to make the world a better place. Sure, there would be logistical and cultural challenges. If being bought outright proves too much of a stretch for Harvard's trustees, we could start by investing in research and infrastructure to encourage the institution to move here for its own good. But we have to act fast. While Trump is swinging his wrecking ball, the time is right to get a good price. All right, we will end our coverage of the Week magazine there for this time. And again, I need to remind you, you have been listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Items read on Airs LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers, and no unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Again, I'm Nancy Porter, and it has been my pleasure to share the Week magazine with you.